Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Zach and Josh. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
Hey. Good morning, everybody. Zach Jones, Josh Mint, hanging with you here for the next 2 hours on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. It is getting cold. It's not ugly outside. It is just cold.
I think it's perfect outside. Perfect. Crisp, cool air.
My hands are cold.
What's the temperature right now? Yeah, that is true.
I got gas this morning, and I'm like, this is kind of painful.
Yeah, it feels like 14. The temperature is 21. Low today is 16. High today is 26, though.
There we go.
We're still on the way up.
Are we still looking at like single digits for Sunday?
According to my phone, kind of.
I was going to say, is it even going to give you like the wind chill stuff or no?
Well, it doesn't give you the wind chill, but the temperature at kickoff, according to my phone right now, is 14. But Monday... The low on Monday is 5. And if I'm looking at like midnight on Monday, like Sunday into Monday, it's going to be 10 degrees.
There we go. There
so we go. Like it's going to be one of those days where it's like, yes, it's the low is, you know, 10 or whatever, mm-hmm. but it might actually be lower than that during the game. Or might actually, like obviously it's going to change a little bit, but it's going to be like one of those where it's like dipping for the next day. Next day is going to be the cold day.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're going to be getting like this is actually going to be warm tomorrow, and tomorrow's going to be worse.
You have no idea how nervous I am that like I'm getting this excited for Bills Ravens. It's going to be cold. It's mm-hmm. going to be at night. It's the last playoff game of the divisional round.
Yeah.
And it's just going to be terrible. It's going to be a bad game. Like, I am very nervous.
No.
That's what I'm nervous about, is that it's not going to live up to the expectations I placed upon it.
No, because...
That's the most nervous I've been.
What is making you feel that way, though? Like, in what world are you worried about any one of these superstar players not doing what they're going to do?
It's less that, and it's more, my expectations are an all-time great game, and that's absurd. Mm. Like, that alone, you're asking for disappointment.
Oh, man, no, because I think like you're looking at the MVP finalists going mm-hmm. up against each other at quarterback. You're looking at a running back that if he had, you know, 20, 30 more carries, he would have.
He's getting 2,000 for the second time.
Probably
in his career.
Gone right up there with Saquon, and maybe even flirted with the record like Saquon did. Like
you have another running back in Cook who is either tops or second in rushing touchdowns this mm-hmm. year.
He is.
He's number one.
I think he is top.
Number one?
I think he is top, yeah. But you have all of these different things. And then you have two great defenses. Like, the Ravens defense, like we've been talking about it a little bit here, like they've really flipped things around this week, mm-hmm. This season, like the back half of the season. They've really changed things. They have the best rushing defense in the league. They have the worst passing defense in the league, statistically, like yards per game and all that. But that might be inflated.
Yep.
You can never tell season outlooks because they weren't great in the beginning of the year. The defense was not great in the beginning of the year. But so you have the potential for Josh Allen to do his thing and, you know, hit Khalil Shakir for big passes, hit Amari Cooper, Keon Coleman, even Mac Hollins. Like there's all that baked into it. And then again, with the Bills defense, it's fully healthy. You're not missing Taron Johnson, Terrell Bernard, and Matt Milano like you were last time.
Yep.
There's no reason to be nervous that this is not going to be an all-time great game.
I know, just in my head, and like you didn't even bring it up either, but like
neither team turns the ball over.
Right.
So I'm not even looking at the whole like slugfest that was Houston and LA, where it's seven turnovers between the two teams, and you're kind of like, I mean, what the hell did I just watch?
Derrick Henry fumbled the ball earlier this season for the first time in like 4 years.
Yeah, and Lamar has like, a career low in picks with eight.
So does Allen.
Or with four, excuse me. And then Allen has really brought that down to the point where I think most people are overly giving him credit for that, where, okay, let's not act like it was a huge problem. 18, yes, is a lot, but...
Well, right, but I think...
But the touchdowns kind of made up for it.
This year is also a career low for him, I believe. Yeah, six.
Is that really his career low?
Mm-hmm. The next lowest is nine in 2019.
2019, okay.
Yeah.
Huh.
So, again, both quarterbacks having an incredible season. And, I don't think there's any reason to not think this game
is a
greatest of all-time game.
I am so excited. I think it's going to be an all-time game. I listened yesterday to Peter Schrager on NFL Network going through, like, the AFC, or not even just AFC, NFL divisional rounds, quarterback matchups, mm-hmm. like all-timers. And he's like, I think this is number one.
Yeah.
And you had 13 seconds, but he's like, yeah, but you know, Mahomes and Allen hadn't become what we all see it now at that time.
They were still on their way up.
You know, there was, I think, like a Steve Young and Brett Favre game in there as well. He's going through it and he's like, I think Lamar and Allen today, right now, is the best. And I'm like, let's go. Sunday, 6th, I'm ready. Let's go. And a part of me is just sitting here going, it's going to be 17-17 with like a minute left in the fourth quarter. And it was just this worst game ever, but somebody's got to win it.
See, I think it's going to be, and I don't want to scare people by saying this, I think it's going to be a 13-seconds-esque game. You're going to have score after score after score where it's just back and forth the whole game. And the defenses are still doing, you know, their thing every once in a while. It's not like, oh, great, the offenses are just going crazy and the defense is just there.
Mm-hmm.
No, the defense is still, I think, going to have its moments. But I think, aside from the overtime part of 13 seconds, I think this game could look a lot like that in terms of the offenses both just having a day and mm-hmm. having those quick answers for each other. Not necessarily quick in sort of game clock time, but like it's like, drive after drive after drive, you have scores. Because
it feels like haymakers.
I do feel like this is going to be one of those games where both teams are trying to just desperately have the ball last,
mm-hmm.
where it's 9-minute drives with, you know, 13 plays. But, you know, it shouldn't take that long, but it is because you're trying to just hold on to the ball. That's going to be the game script for both of these teams, I think. And rightfully so. I mean, you're looking at two incredible offenses, two incredible defenses, and if you're the coaches going against that, what's your plan? It's to keep the ball away from the other team.
Mm-hmm.
And so with the way that these two teams are set up, they're both set up in completely different ways to do that. I mean, obviously Derrick Henry can just run the ball anywhere he wants, and that kills time, that helps you control time. And mm-hmm. then with the Bills, what they've done all season, give the ball to James Cook. Oh, actually, we're going to throw it now. We're going to throw it to Khalil Shakir, and he always catches everything.
Spread the ball around. Yeah,
it's the everybody eats thing. That also helps kill clock because you're doing different things every single play,
mm-hmm.
and it's keeping guys fresh. It's keeping guys in tune with the game. So I really feel like this is one of those games where it's going to come down to who has the ball last and who plays the perfect game.
We were talking a little bit there about injuries. You were, and you mentioned for the Bills having their three defensive mm-hmm. players back, key defensive players, Matt Milano having arguably his best game this year against Denver. I know a big point has been brought a lot for the Bills offense. They didn't have Amari Cooper. You know, Matt Collins was still trying to find his role. Keon Coleman, that was his fourth game in the NFL. You know, he was trying to find his role. Khalil Shakir gets hurt in the middle of that game and ultimately misses the next game against Houston.
Yeah, and I even didn't even think about this. Allen's hand was still weird.
That's like
his left hand was still broken, and you couldn't. I mean, not to say that hampered his throwing or anything like that, but
handoffs.
You kind of wanted to be a little more careful with that because you didn't want him to injure it more or injure something else while trying to protect it. So, I think that definitely played into it too. I kind of forgot about that.
But on that point, there may be a key player out for Baltimore,
mm-hmm.
Zay Flowers. How much does him potentially missing for you? How much does that play into it?
A lot. It's a big mm-hmm. factor because that was their one sort of explosive outlet in the passing game. I mean, yes, they have Isaiah Likely and Mark Andrews, but they are not the same type of player as Zay Flowers is.
Mm-hmm.
Zay Flowers has just incredible speed and the ability to just break a game wide open. I mean, he was their first ever 1,000-yard receiver The Ravens have been around for
Pro
quite
Bowl
some
wide
time.
Receiver, Pro Bowl wide receiver.
Okay. All right. Sorry.
I think they've had another 1,000-yard receiver.
Regardless, it's still historic, mm-hmm. the fact that he was a Pro Bowl wide receiver and mm-hmm. first 1,000-yard receiver. That means something, especially in a franchise-long sort of thing. So I do think that that affects the game heavily because mm-hmm. who else are they going to pass to? I mean, again, like I said, Mark Andrews and Isaiah Likely, but you can only pass to them so much until the other team starts cluing in on it. I mean, the added benefit is they have Derrick Henry.
Mm-hmm.
So there is another outlet here in terms of, you know, switching things up. But I think that what everybody eats has shown me personally is that not necessarily you have to always have so many different targets, but there is a bonus to having that. There is a definitive advantage, I think, in terms of just the passing game to having so many different available targets that can all be reliable. If they're not reliable, then it doesn't really mean anything. But if they're reliable like the Bills' targets are, it makes a big difference. And when you're looking at the Ravens, they have other guys, but they don't have other reliable guys. They have Rashad Bateman, Nelson Agholor, Devontae Walker, like Tylan Wallace. Like, looking at all those names, it's not... And sure, you know, anyone can have a day, but like it's not names that jump off the paper and scream to you like, oh, they have a good backup, or oh, they have other options available that will help them at least have some sort of passing game outlet when Derrick Henry needs a breather or when the Bills are shutting him down. They don't necessarily have that. And I think that's going to be a big part of the puzzle here. But the counter to that is, of course, Lamar Jackson's rushing ability and Derrick Henry's rushing ability. Like there's not really anything to counter that. So you kind of mm-hmm. have to have a little bit of a back and forth there. But the fact that they're going to be so heavily relying on the run probably is going to be good for the Bills and also could be bad for the Bills. Because
if you don't figure it out.
You have to figure it out early. Yeah. If you don't figure it out early, it's going to be a long day.
Looking at the reception numbers of the Ravens receivers, Flowers is very clearly ahead. 74, just over 1,000 yards, 4 touchdowns. Mark Andrews is in second, which is, you know, Andrews' season has been weird, by the way. Especially how it began, where seemingly he just wasn't doing anything.
I mean,
what's
for
going
the first
on,
month
that?
Of the season, I remember everyone in fantasy mm-hmm. football being like, why is he here?
Is he just gone? Did we miss that he retired? What have you?
Yeah.
He finishes with 57 catches, 700 yards, and 11 touchdowns in the regular season.
Wow.
He's number two in catches for them, which, again, feels insane.
How many of those came after, like, the first 6 weeks, though? Like, I feel like mm-hmm. it just kind of all of a sudden turned on because—
Love that you asked that. So the first 4 weeks, he is essentially a non-factor. He has 6 catches through the first 4 weeks. All of those came in the first 2 games. The next 2, Dallas and Buffalo, he has 1 target each. Then it starts to ramp up a little bit.
Yeah.
Against Cincinnati, he has four catches. Washington, 3 catches, his first touchdown of the year. Tampa goes 4 for 4, 2 touchdowns. Cleveland, 5 for 5, 1 touchdown. And then he does finish off the year catching 6 straight touchdowns. Each of the last 6 games, he has 1 touchdown. So wow. He kind of came on as the year went along. He was somebody that as the year progressed, mm-hmm. he got better.
And he really stacked on the yards, too, because mm-hmm. like you talked about, he has, what, 700 yards or
700
600 yards?
700 on the dot, yep.
Yeah. Like, it's, you know, he turned it on. And I think, you know, seeing how this defense is changing a little bit, or this offense is changing a little bit for them, if Zay Flowers is out, he kind of now becomes their number one target in the passing game.
Mm-hmm.
Him and Isaiah Likely, because Isaiah Likely has also had his moments this year where when Andrews wasn't performing or when they were kind of going away from Andrews, Likely was stepping up into the passing game.
Look at that first game. 12 targets, 9 catches, right. Over 100 yards, and
targets.
A touchdown. Yeah.
12 targets is the craziest thing for me. Like, that's...
Yeah, because he never got close to that again.
Right. And that's the thing that, like, stands out of, like, were they just testing something? Were they just seeing, like, what they could do?
Mm-hmm.
Was it a let's game plan for Kansas City specifically, right. And that's what it was? And it kind of makes me wonder, like, if we'll ever see something like that come back. I don't think we will, especially now because it's been like a whole season. And like you said, he hasn't come anywhere close to that. But with Zay Flowers out, I wonder if they're going to start to lean on Likely and Andrews a lot more than they normally would. Because, again, their other wide receiver options are not that great. And they don't really
pass. I do wonder about Rashad Bateman.
I do too, but like.
He's got 10 touchdowns this year. Like, he's had a really good year.
Okay. I didn't know that.
He's done that on 47 catches.
Right.
Because
that's the thing.
It's
like,
a big majority,
like,
of his catches are touchdowns.
It feels like he didn't have that big of a volume, so I wasn't expecting 10 touchdowns. That's That's pretty good.
But 780 yards, 47 catches. I do look at their passing game, though.
Mm-hmm.
And Bulldogs brought it up a lot. This is an important game for, I think, Bobby Babich and Sean McDermott for the rest of their careers. Babich is his first year as a defensive coordinator, right? I mean, and it's been an up-and-down year,
mm-hmm.
very much an up-and-down year. There have been great moments where you're just like, hey, hats off to you. The beginning of the year, I think, especially, when it was a hodgepodge of guys, you know, the UB undrafted guys having big moments,
yep.
Jamarcus Ingram, Cam Lewis, those guys. It's also been bad. You know, the LA game where they were perfection, but the defense didn't help. You know, the Lions game even. I loved the first half, but you can argue the second half was bad. And you're going up against arguably one of the most efficient offenses the league has ever seen in this Baltimore Ravens team. A part of me, I think that maybe is also where I'm so nervous, is knowing where the conversation will go if the team loses. I think that's the thing. I mentioned it yesterday, and it's for both teams. Like, where do you go next if you lose this game? You lost another important playoff game. It's another year not going to the Super Bowl when you have two all-world talents at quarterback. Where do you go next? And for me, it does just seem like no matter what the result is, they could lose the game 21-17. And I feel like it'll come down to McDermott. And so I wonder for him this season how much more – he's been open, Josh, and he's been more relaxed. He's joking with the media. Mm-hmm. You heard Deion Dawkins on Colin Cowherd even specifically mentioned, like, this is the best he's seen McDermott.
Yeah.
And it does feel like he's not wound up so tight, and it does feel like he's more relaxed. A part of me almost wants this game for him, too. Like, I've mentioned, like, for Allen and Lamar, like, how important this game is going to be, and I love that for them. I also kind of want it for McDermott. Harbaugh's got his Super Bowl. He's kind of built his credibility as one of the better coaches in football, better team builders, the whole thing. We've kind of gotten to a point now as Bills fans, but I think even, like, nationally, forgetting that McDermott came in year one on an effectively rebuilding roster and broke a 17-year playoff drought.
Yeah.
In a year that really was not supposed to happen, he came in day one and did it. They lose a bad playoff game to Jacksonville, but that was not really the important bit. It was more they broke a drought.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love this for him. If he could go in there, him and Babich, put up a game plan, you're healthy. We've mentioned it multiple times. Milano, Johnson, and Bernard all back in this game. If he can go in, I'm not saying pitch a shutout, but cause the likely MVP of the league to have trouble. And you've kind of been able to do that. Week four was sort of the first time where it was like an all-around just, ooh, you have no idea what's happening. And even then in the second half, they sort of figured it out.
Mm-hmm.
If they go in, you know, white hot to begin a game like they did against Detroit, like they did against Kansas City, I would love that for McDermott to have this on his mantle. It's a big playoff game. It's arguably the biggest game of the year. I think many people are assuming the winner of this game will beat Kansas City or will have the ability to beat Kansas City on the road to go make their first Super Bowl. A part of me does kind of want it for him. I've been a bit of a McDermott apologist. I won't deny that. I think he is a much better coach than he has at times given credit for. But I'd also like admit he has had some huge screw-ups in these big moments. And if he can get something like that, and if just one piece like a Zay Flowers is not in that game, and he can just more zero in on the tight ends, Derrick Henry, Lamar Jackson, and can figure out a way for this defense to just kind of go after him, I would love that for him. I really it wouldn't be my immediate thought, and it's why, you know, it's Wednesday and I'm kind of having this first thought now. But come like Monday or Tuesday next week, Wednesday next week, if they want it,
mm-hmm.
I'd probably be sitting there going, good for him.
Yeah,
right. It took a while, but now he's got that marquee playoff victory because he doesn't really have it now. The marquee playoff games are losses,
mm-hmm.
and many of them have been just screw-ups by him.
Yeah, and I think also, too, like what plays into that whole conversation with the fact that this is a big game for him and Babich, I think it's a bigger game for McDermott just because of the fact that Babich is in his first year as a DC. Yes, it's under a defensive head coach, so like you're kind of expecting him to, you know, learn more and get better quicker, but at the same time, it's kind of like, you know, hey, it's your first year. Let's give you a little slack here. Let's see what you can do. Obviously, it's a big game. You need to step up, but like, it's still his first year. He's still learning. He's still mm-hmm. kind of getting comfortable with the fact that he is the defensive coordinator. And I think to your point there too about, you know, getting up on them early with the fact that if Zay Flowers is out, you have one less explosive player to worry about. You have one less Pro Bowler to worry about. This roster for the Ravens has 9 Pro Bowlers on it. It's a lot.
Like, it's the most Ravens thing ever.
It's way too many, but it's a lot. Like, there should be less, but when you look at how they can game plan this and how they can go at the Ravens offense, the tight ends will be a problem if Zay Flowers is out. But you also have to worry about Derrick Henry, which is like that two-headed monster that you're kind of terrified of, with him and Jackson being able to rush. If you want to use your linebackers to kind of subdue them, then you're kind of leaving the tight ends open. So it's going to be a lot on the secondary and the linebackers, I think, in this game. And from what we saw against the Broncos this past week, early on in the game, that was not going well. And that's kind of the reason why Bo Nix gets a big touchdown early, over the top and everything like that, like with kind of beating the secondary, which is something we don't normally see in this McDermott defense.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's something that got really keyed in on, or will get keyed in on this week, because it is only Wednesday. I don't know why I was thinking.
Yeah, the Bills are finally getting back to practice.
Yeah,
today.
It feels like it's a lot later in the week, but it's only Wednesday. But I think that's something that they're going to have to really focus in on is how are we going to contain both down the field and short mm-hmm. field, because you're going to need to utilize your linebackers for both. And I think that's also where the defensive line really needs to step up. I mean, that defensive line needs to get pressure. They haven't gotten any pressure this week.
It's been bad.
This past month, basically. And, I mean, mainly Ed Oliver needs to start showing that he is Ed Oliver again. I mean, it's not the end of the world by any means, but it is a big part of the reason why I'm a little concerned about how they're going to go about this.
You do need the interior of the offensive or the defensive line to pop off. You mm-hmm. need to, you've paid at Oliver. You know, Rousseau is looking for a big time contract. You have multiple guys on that line that you've had for a number of years. Yes, they are more built for the passing oriented era of the NFL, where you're a little bit smaller, more quick to get to the quarterback, not really built to stop Derrick Henry. That doesn't change the fact that that's what you need to do. You need to set the edge. You need to make sure that Lamar is not getting to the outside and, mm-hmm. and popping a big one off. Same with Henry.
Well, yeah, I think it's...
And they did a better job in the second half of that week four matchup. It was the big run, sure, but that's what kills you,
right,
is those big plays. Anyone that says they weren't a little nervous after immediately a big play happened against Denver's line to themselves. It was the first drive, saw Bo Nix immediately hit a bomb, and you're like, great, awesome.
But if you
here we go again.
If you take away that Derrick Henry run, and I'm not saying like this is a great number at all, it's still not great. The run was 87 yards. He had 199 yards on the day. If you take away that big run, or you cut it in half, or you whatever, 112 yards on the day is what Derrick Henry would have had. And that run was early in the game. We always see this Bills defense, and kind of the offense too, they come out a little sluggish every once in a while in the beginning of the game, and then the second half they turn mm-hmm. it on. That's kind of what happened in this game too, in week four. It's just that stupid trick play. Like, that one-time trick play that you probably shouldn't have done is what killed your momentum on offense. Defense kept it going. Defense kind of stood strong
mm-hmm.
for the second half. So I feel like as long as they can come out with that second half defense and get on it early, things will be fine. But if you don't get on this team early and they put up one or two scores on you in the first quarter and a half, I mean, it's going to be a long day trying to come back from that.
This does feel like a game. This does feel a game not necessarily being decided in the first quarter, but mm-hmm. you'll kind of get an idea of how you're going to be feeling for the next 3 hours.
Whoever wins the first quarter, quote unquote, will control the game up until like the 2 minute warning. Because
yeah.
I think that this is one of those games where whoever gets in the driver's seat first is going to have the ultimate say on what happens for the entire game. It's not going to be one of those games where it goes back and forth. I think it's going to be whoever's behind first is going to be chasing for quite some time in the game.
Yeah.
And that's the part that makes me the most nervous.
Mm-hmm. 803-0550, the number two call. I did post it to Twitter as well if you want to call and give your thoughts as well. What do you think is more likely? We haven't talked about this aspect yet. We were talking a little bit about McDermott and the scrubs he's had in the playoffs. But how about a bad playoff game from Jackson? It has become kind of notorious. We'll go through some of his playoff numbers as well up after the break. Also looking for your calls and tweets as well. 803-0550, again, the number to call. Sal Capaccio will join the show in about an hour as the Bills get back to practice today. McDermott expected to speak around 12 o'clock today. Zach Jones and Josh Schmidt, you're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on WGR.
I thought James Cook's vision was sensational. You know, like his ability to
wait for the hole and then get through the hole. That vision and burst was one of the better performances when it comes to that that I've seen all season. So it was in many ways, I don't want to say flawless, but a big time performance by that whole group.
There is Dan Orlovsky on yesterday with One Bills Live, giving his thoughts on the Bills running game, specifically James Cook's performance against the Denver Broncos, which did see him go for 120 yards rushing on 23 attempts. He also had a touchdown. Did not had anything through the air. That was namely Ty Johnson. I always see T. Johnson, and I always want to say Taron Johnson.
Yeah.
Ty Johnson, who Josh Allen says is the best third down back in the sport. Two catches off two targets, 26 yards, and of course that one absurd touchdown that kind of just left your jaw on the floor.
Thurman Thomas also this morning with Jeremy and Joe had high praise for Ty Johnson and all the running backs in the
I just enjoyed room, so. That for like 4 years the Bills were like, we need a pass catching back. We need that third down back. They got burned by JD McKissick. Mm-hmm. You know, they tried with Nyheim Hines. They've tried drafting guys. James Cook is even kind of like, we need you to be the receiving back. He turns out to be a bell cow. And it's this random guy
Bills
who
left.
Shows up. They had no real aspirations, and it's like, that's actually exactly what we were looking for like years.
Let's not forget when they tried it with Matt Breida for three
Matt
games.
Breida.
Bills legend Matt Breida.
I love that. Like it's in a random year where they don't care, or I don't want to say they didn't care, but they it was not clearly like a main focus of the offseason. It's exactly what we were looking for.
I think it was at the Jets game a couple of weeks ago too. I think Ty Johnson's wife or girlfriend, his wife had the sign up with his face on the front and on the back. It said, "Jets, thanks for releasing my husband."
Saw that. Beautiful. I love the little pettiness.
Like, that's just great. It's so good. Like it's been a good season for him. Like he's actually made a role for himself in the Bills, and he's made a good part of their he's been a good part of their offense.
It's going to be fun if they do go on a Super Bowl run that in like 15 years there will be a lot of people that are like, man, like a lot of non-Bills fans are like, man, who is this Ty Johnson guy? And every Bills fan's going to be like, sit down, I've got a story to
we
tell
have
you
lore to tell you.
And the thing is too, it's not even like, you know, statistically his best season. You mentioned the Jets there too. In 2021, just as a receiver, 55 targets, 34 catches, 372 yards, and two touchdowns. This year, he actually only has 18 catches, or at least in the regular season, only 18 catches, three touchdowns. Like, he's done a lot of work on very minimal touches.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's maybe the most impressive thing for him. It's not like he's been like a focal point of the offense. He's just been able to kind of get it done and when he's been asked to. And I think that's been more of the key thing is the clutch plays that he's able to make, of course, the touchdown being one of them, where you're just like, dude, it's how you make a name for yourself. It is. There's going to be a lot of guys that if the Bills win the Super Bowl that are going to be trivia questions on trivia night at many local drinking holes. It's just Matt Collins led the Bills in receiving touchdowns. Yeah. Who's going to nail that outside of a Bills fan in the year like 2036? Be honest. Who's going to nail that? Nobody. A Matt Collins fan. Your one friend who's savant that knows like everything about like the 1960s of the NFL, and you're like, dude, you're like 24. Why?
How much did you read?
Why do you know so much? Yeah, that's like there's gonna be a lot of trivia questions for just this Bills season alone. Even if they don't win the playoff or don't win the Super Bowl, there's gonna be a lot of just like, how did you do that? 803-0550, the number to call. We'll start off today with Angelo on the line. Angelo, how are we doing this morning?
Hi, how you doing, guys?
Doing well.
Just a couple questions. How's Ty Johnson doing since you're talking about him? And is he going to play or not? And do you think they'll spy Lamar Jackson? They'll have a spy for him at all?
Hey, Angelo, thanks for the call. I think you meant Ray Davis. Ray Davis is in concussion protocol. Ty Johnson's fine.
Yeah.
Ty Johnson had no injury designations.
As far as we know, he's good to go.
Ray Davis, though, did miss the rest of the game with concussion. He, from what we knew before, was still in concussion protocol. I don't imagine he'll play this game. I think that's why a lot of talk for that third running back is maybe like a Frank Gore Jr. call-up, maybe. I don't know. We all were kind of hoping for it in the last week against New England. Didn't happen just because of the minimal call-ups you had. In terms of the spy, yeah. You have to with Lamar. It's the same thing with Allen, though. It's the exact same thing with Allen. In terms of who's going to do it, I mean, Milano?
I think he's the right answer.
You put the guy that has – I would say probably the best football intelligence just kind of – he's always been in the right spot at the right time. And you saw in the wild card game, the closing speed seemed to be back.
That well, see, I was going to say, like, I wonder if Dorian Williams is also going to be an option for the
spot on
Lamont.
He's not on the field enough.
But he, right, he's not on the field enough. But I think the fact that Milano's closing speed looked to be back in the game – and it, sure, it was just that one play, really. But over the whole game, Milano, it looked like he was – Matt Milano, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it wasn't just that one play. It was the entire game. He had other bits, other moments where he was there, and he was doing good.
Yeah.
So I wonder if that kind of maybe changed things, because maybe originally it was kind of a, we'll see who can kind of handle it here, because Dorian Williams does have that just athletic ability, but he doesn't necessarily have the football IQ yet that Matt Milano has.
Yeah.
Milano is just, he's got that just different bit of football sense.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's going to be like a driving edge, even though if he isn't as fast as he was or isn't at his top speed, the football IQ definitely increases that.
Yep.
A lot.
803-0550, the number to call if you want to jump on with us today. We also got some tweets to get to, and a reminder that when we get Connect to our fans, it is brought to you by Northtown Kia. Shop online at northtownkia.com. Having a little bit of fun today talking about what's more likely, a divisional round screw-up by Bills head coach Sean McDermott or a playoff screw-up by Lamar Jackson. Just going through his playoff numbers here, it is kind of, it's sort of become the talking point with him. In 7 playoff games, he's got a record of 3-4, of course, adding this last game this past week. His completion percentage is just under 60, 8 touchdown passes to 6 interceptions. He has not been the same quarterback from the playoffs to the regular season. That's not really... It's not a new development that he's kind of had that Peyton Manning sort of look to him, where it's like, hey, he'll light you up in the regular season. Mm-hmm. You get him on the road in the playoffs, or you just get him in the playoffs at all. I mean, they've had the one seed twice. They have a single playoff win to their name in that run and one AFC championship appearance.
And that kind of plays back to the coaching conversation we were having at the end of the last segment with John Harbaugh, because John Harbaugh is one of those coaches where he's a great coach, he's a good team builder, and he can get everything right. But once it gets out to playing on the field, you kind of wonder, can his players finish the job? And for the most part so far, Lamar has had issues with that.
Yep. Alex Brasky over at Batavia Daily, he tweets in, option 3, Sean McDermott masterclass.
I love it. That's good confidence. I like it. I like it, Alex. I think we might see that. I really do. I wonder what the game plan will be, but I have confidence. It feels different than years past, where you kind of had these shaky moments all throughout the season. And sure, there's still been times this season where it's like, what's the defense doing? What's going on? But it's a very quick fix whenever that does happen. Like the Rams week, it was, man, Matthew Stafford was great, but you really could have made some differences there on defense. Mm-hmm. And then the next week it was, yep, everything's fine. We're going to go out there and beat Detroit.
And again, I can understand the fear of the second half performance in that game, but you were leading that, 35-14, and you made Detroit chase that on the road.
Yep.
And so that's another big thing, too, of like the idea that you bring up the Lamar Jackson playoff struggles on the road at night, a ravenous crowd. Again, there's going to be the storyline of he stole the MVP from Allen. That, you know, he's taken awards Allen should have this year. That crowd is going to be engaged. They're going to get going. And that's why I think the first quarter, funny enough, is going to mean a lot in this game. If it does start off with, let's say the Bills win the toss, they defer. They always do, and I appreciate that. You need more information. I'm all for it. And the idea of double dipping at the end of the first half, starting the second half,
it's always been my favorite.
I will never take the first kickoff to open up a game. Overtime's a little different. I will never take it to open up a game. But on that point, if they go 3-and-out, like the Detroit game, like I mentioned, or like the Kansas City game where it's a turnover, that crowd will not shut up. It is going to be loud,
MVP
aggressive.
Chance,
yep.
Like,
you know, Bronx cheers kind of deal towards Lamar, the whole thing. And then if the Bills go up 7-0, 10-0, what have you, you're chasing a game on the road. It's a little different at home where the crowd's going to be with you and the whole thing. Then all of a sudden with that, you're going to silent counts. The Ravens are also the second most penalized team in the NFL.
Right. We saw that a lot. I mean, granted, it's the first week of the year, so there's a lot different from now to then. But that first week of the year, remember how many times that offensive line got penalized?
Oh, that was brutal. Yeah, it was brutal.
Like,
yeah.
There was a lot going on in that first game.
Yep.
And it was all eyes were on you, too. So – and the problem hasn't gone away. That's why I bring it up. I understand it's the first week of the year, but the problem has not gone away.
Mm-hmm.
It's still a very prevalent thing on their offensive line. So, and I still think back to the quote that was brought up earlier this week. Lamar Jackson had issues the last time the Ravens were here in the playoffs when there was only 6,000 fans here. Like, that's like not even half of what is going to be there on Sunday.
Yeah.
And sure, there'll be Ravens fans there, but it's going to be likely like a 95-5 split. It's not going to be that big of a deal. Like,
it's not going to be many. Harry tweets in both, which I love the whole immovable object, unstoppable force. That's going to be awesome. Honestly, that might be, like, if you're a neutral fan, the funnest part about it is if both happen and you're just like, which one's better?
Right. Or which one's worse?
Which one's going to be worse?
Yeah.
That could be tough. And then Steven tweets in, just gives like a whole rundown here. McDermott screws up. Lamar counters by having a bad game. McDermott does more screwing up. 17 heroics.
I think this kind of is like the entirety of the story in Harry's tweet, because it feels like one of those games where it's going to be like, you know, very back and forth in terms of those screw ups, and then all of a sudden Allen comes in and it's just like, hey, here's 5 touchdowns.
Look, I'll take the win, but there will be a part of me that's just like, damn.
Yeah,
okay, I don't want to judge, but it's just like I already know. Then immediately, like, there's going to be a sentiment of the fan base that won't enjoy the win, and is just going to complain. And I'm like, no,
yeah,
that's why. Like, to Alex's point, I need that McDermott masterclass so that we can just enjoy the win. If Allen had a bad game and they win like 21-17, and it's just like, McDermott did it. Like, he shut down Lamar. He shut down the. No one's going to be like, man, what's going on with Allen? He had a great game against Denver. He's been the MVP most of this year. Everyone will move on. He's been, you know, clutch in most of the playoff games he's ever played in, outside of like two. The same cannot be said for McDermott. So I feel like even if like Allen had like an okay game and they won, people would move on pretty quick and just be like, bring on KC, let's go, baby. If the Bills win, but they give up like 30 points, I can't. I have such a fear with that, because I want to just enjoy this. It's why, like, I think a part of me is not nervous. I'm just excited to enjoy the game. I love playoff football. This is what I've been waiting for 4 months. Basically, once we found out the Bills weren't a bad team this year, I was like, let's go. When's January? Screw Christmas. Screw Thanksgiving. I'm ready to go. I don't need the holidays. I need playoff football. Josh, I told you yesterday, I watched like the 0-3 playoffs back.
Yeah, no, that's some. I don't want to call that sicko behavior, because I also want playoff football.
I am who I am, man. It's all right.
But it's borderline. Like, it's unless, like, I don't know about that.
It's all right. It is what it is. That, man, those playoffs were sick.
They were. Like, it was a great year. That's a good
26
season.
You got the double overtime with Carolina, St. Louis. Mm-hmm. Peyton disaster class. I mean, that's just iconic.
I mean, I think if I had to go back and like. Are you talking? You were watching what round of the playoffs were you watching? Were you watching wild card games? Or were you watching
the whole thing?
Just the whole thing?
Yeah, it was like the condensed games, the whole thing.
Oh, wow, playoffs. That's nice.
It's like an hour and a half, baby. I loved it. I loved everything about it.
I like that. Because see, my one of my favorite Super Bowls that always sticks out in my head was Broncos Seahawks. I mean, that was like right when I started getting into football as a sport.
And the suddenness of this iconic Broncos offense.
Like this moment. And then
just falling apart.
Yeah, exactly. And it was just like, wow, like this is fantastic. And like it, like if I had to go back and watch something, it'd probably be that one.
Yeah.
It'd probably be that Super Bowl, because it was just so much fun.
Another game, by the way, in that 0-3 playoffs. Seahawks, Packers, wild card round, Matt Hasselbeck's. We want the ball and we're going to score.
Yes.
And immediately throwing a pick. There is not a better playoffs than 0-3. I was 5 years old and I missed greatness. It is unbelievable.
We want the entire thing.
And immediately throws a pick six.
But the thing is, though, is if he does score, it's an iconic moment forever. Like, that is like the greatest ball game call like ever. You know, like, oh,
absolutely.
This is it.
We won.
Like, it. Either way, if you mess up and lose, it's iconic.
But it's also why, like, Denver Broncos fans, maybe don't cheer "We want Buffalo."
Yeah.
It sounds cool in the small chance that you actually nail it and you're like, we got past Buffalo. Like, you're a 9-point underdog. Let's maybe not do this.
I mean,
Matt, you know, let's not go out. I'm going to score.
Yeah, right. Like, this happened a couple years ago in the NHL playoffs. Like, the "We want Florida" from Toronto, and then Toronto proceeds to get destroyed by the Panthers as they're on the way to the Stanley Cup.
It's never worked.
It's never worked. It's never worked out well for anyone.
We had to deal with this for a decade in college football. Like, anytime a team had a big win and we're playing Alabama next, like, "We want Bama." And it's like, you actually don't.
No, you really don't.
You don't. They are better than – you're going to find out in the film room in about an hour and a half. Just have your moment now, man. It's going to be bad. It always happens, and I don't understand it. I never want Bills fans to do that. If they do that, I'm calling them out. It's going to happen. Guys, it's going to be bad karma coming on you. It's the hubris. It's Icarus. We all need to know this. 803-0550, the number to call. Steven, Johnny, we'll get to you guys after a quick timeout. Zach Jones, Josh Mann hanging with you here on the Northtown Automotive X Point Show on WGR.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hour number one rolls along here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. Let's hit one more call here before our next timeout. We go to Johnny on the line. Johnny, how are we doing today?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. Doing well. Just wanted to call, kind of comment on what you guys were talking about before, you know, how we get the win. I know you guys said you want to see McDermott masterclass. But to me, a McDermott masterclass is just getting the win by any means possible.
That's fair. That's
probably fair. You know, like, for example, we're playing against one of the best offenses in the league here, right? And in my opinion, if we allow 34 points and we score 35, well, guess what? McDermott did his job in letting that offense open up and letting Josh do his thing. I want to see us be aggressive. You know, I don't want to see what we did in that first game, not going for, you know, fourth and ones, fourth and twos. He's been aggressive most of the year. And I know sometimes we kind of get on him about not being aggressive enough on fourth downs and, you know, kind of screwing up some game management and certain points, but you know, he does a pretty great job of it. He's one of the more aggressive coaches in the league. And I just hope it continues on Sunday. And, you know, if you go for it in your own like 30, 35 yard line, whatever it's got to be, if it's fourth and one and we don't get it, I can live with that the next day. Especially, you know, you're taking the ball out of the Ravens' hands and you're kind of containing clock too. So I think having the ball, doing those types of things, even if you give up, hopefully you can hold them to 3 points. I want to see us be aggressive and I want to see Josh show out. So, hey, go Bills.
Go Bills. Johnny, thanks for the call, man. I agree on that. Look, the Bills, especially in the playoffs, they could win 3-0, and I'm ecstatic. It's more my job is then the next day I'm like, oh, but I have to talk to people now. It's like, we're going to see how that goes. And it has changed my perception on like how wins are. I used to not really care too much about style points, but now I'm like, eh. But for like a week, I'm going to have to talk about the lack of style points or the abundance of style points. That's a lot of it where it comes from me. I think you're right, though. Like McDermott gets an A+ if they win the game.
Mm-hmm.
Because defense, especially in the modern day, has become more of like, just stop the superstar quarterback more than their stops yours. Especially now that the Bills have Allen, Baltimore. That's the, right. You win 35-31, right? Like, you did your job. Like,
yeah, you don't have to shut him down entirely. You just have to shut him down once or twice.
And
hope that your guy keeps scoring.
Yeah, and that could be the win. On the fourth down point, too, I loved when Sean McDermott joined Chip and the Bulldog after the Kansas City game and, like, really went in depth of, like, what goes into these fourth down decisions leading into a week and discussing the opponent and who it is and specifically, you know, why he was talking about it with Kansas City. Going forward on fourth down to close out the game, to shut it down.
Yeah.
I will be stunned if they don't go for a lot of fourth downs against Baltimore for that exact reason of taking the ball away from Jackson, keeping him off the field, limiting their possessions, and just keeping your offense on the field. I liked a lot what they did against Denver. It wasn't as aggressive as I would like, mainly because there were screw-ups. That, you know, there was false starts off, you know, what have you, misses to Dawson Knox, missed calls in the end zone. But they were making it third and two, third and three, and setting up to where, like, Cook can run it here, or Allen's just going to sneak it. My one issue with the Ty Johnson touchdown, and it's a small one because he ultimately did score, is Josh, my guy, just get the first down. Just run it. It's wide open. They have literally parted the Red Sea for you. Just do it. And he doesn't, and then all of a sudden that kind of run lane goes away. And look, it's a great touchdown to Ty Johnson. I will say, though, there's going to be a part of me, a pretty large one on Sunday, that if that same situation arises and he can run and make that first down, I'm shouting on my TV, get the first! Because you want to maintain these drives, you want to sustain them, and then you want to score. Those plays happen, they don't happen all the time. And that's my only worry, but I think they're going to be aggressive. I think they are going to try their hardest to not let Lamar have the ball last, to make it to where they have to score with them every single time. And I do think there is something to him getting real wound up tight. And you're on the road, you're running a silent count, and that crowd is going to be against you the entire game. It is going to be a tall task to win on the road. But, and we talked about it yesterday, there is literally no better coach at winning road playoff games than John Harbaugh. He has 8 of them. That's the most by any coach in the NFL. Got a lot of them early, but has also gotten some of them late as well. 803-0550, the number to call if you want to jump on with Josh Schmidt and myself. Zach Capaccio joining the show in about a half hour. You're listening to WGR.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Zach and Josh. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
You don't have to throw it 50 times. You know, I think an interesting stat was, I think the passes, quarterbacks that attempt more than 50 passes a game have won 22% of their games, other than Tom Brady. So he's won like 70% of the games, and he's had to throw for more than 45 times or something. So if you don't have Tom Brady, then you probably shouldn't throw it 45 or 50 times a game.
I've seen that clip going around a lot on social media. That is new Patriots head coach Mike Vrabel doing an interview on our sister station over in Boston, WEEI. I enjoy that clip because I've seen a lot of people like lose their minds. They're like, oh no, Drake May's screwed. He's going to want to run the ball forever. Like he's doing like there was another part of the clip as well. I wanted to play that one just because it was more of the passing game. But he mentions also like the running game where it's like, yeah, teams that have run the ball 40 plus times like are like 145-1. Like, and it's like, well, yeah. If you ran the ball 40 times in a game, you likely were leading by a ton. And the second half was you going like, just get out of here, guys. I got reservations at name this restaurant here. Got reservations at Dorsia. Let's go. Let's get through this.
Well, that's
if you're passing the ball 50 times a game, you're likely down.
Right. And that's the thing, too, is like I feel like those numbers always get skewed. And I feel like it's been kind of one of the talking points for this game with Bills Ravens, too, because it's like when you're up, you're going to be running the ball more. And when you're up and you have a good running back or the best running back in the league, you're also going to be running the ball more. So, like, you're going to see more inflated stats. You're going to see bigger numbers and everything like that. So, it's just kind of crazy how stuff like that gets skewed.
But perfect example of that with passing stats. Mm-hmm. Like, we're talking about Allen as an MVP, and I think rightfully so. They're 13-4. The whole thing. The 3 years prior to this year, his passing attempts. We'll go to 20 since his ascension. 20 attempts, 572, 646. 567, 579. Do you know what his number was this year, Josh? Albeit with one game he did not play. 483. And they're 13-4. That matches their win total from 22 and from 20. He threw way less passes.
Wow.
they ran the ball more.
I remember.
But even then, James Cook, though, himself, I think is down like 30. And ultimately, he missed the Jets game. He was down like 30 carries from last year.
I remember we talked in the offseason, like right before the season started, we were doing our predictions for like who was going to have what and everything like that. I think we were talking about Allen having upwards of 500, 600 passes.
I was looking at it, too, of like they're going to use it in the run game. I thought, honestly, a perfect example, Denver. Mm-hmm. Where they use a lot of bubble screens to kind of get their run game going. Mm-hmm. I kind of was assuming that. It didn't turn into that at all. Instead, it just became, we're going to be horrifyingly efficient that no one can really stop us. Mm-hmm. We're going to score points, and then we're going to kind of just kill the game out. We're going to hand the ball off to Ray Davis. Josh is going to have a few runs here and there. We're going to kill the game out, and we're not going to have to do too much. Even look at this past week. Allen ends up having 26 passing attempts. It wasn't like we asked him to have a 45 game, what have you. Jackson's sort of the same thing. For as great as his passing season was, what do you have against the Steelers? Like 21 passing attempts? That's the thing. I mean, like, if you have those high passing numbers, it's because your team is down.
Right.
If you have high rushing numbers, it's because your team is up. So I like that quote from Vrabel, because I think Vrabel is intelligent enough, and you can kind of tell, too. He's, like, sort of laughing there, and he's, like, mentioning, like, hey, you really only want to do that, like, if Brady's your quarterback. Partly because, like, you only really want to do it if you're down.
Jackson was 16 of 21.
16 of 21, yeah.
Against Pittsburgh.
And then, yeah, real quick on James Cook's rushing numbers this year. Last year, he had 237 attempts. This year, 207. And he ultimately missed about two games.
Right.
He missed the Jets game, and he doesn't play against New England. So he maybe equals out about there, but.
Sure, but at the same time, like, I don't think that those missed games, like, make much of a difference, because. Even if he had played those games, like let's say those games mattered, right? I think it would still be more of the same of what we saw all season, where it was kind of a half and half the whole game, right? Like we never saw the game like last year, I think it was, where James Cook had
Cowboys.
A day against Cowboys, against the Cowboys, and he was going all the time, and we never saw a game like that this year. There wasn't, I don't think anyway. Am I misremembering some of these games where maybe he did have more of it? But I think also the fact of Ray Davis and Ty Johnson also being so good in the running game, it kind of is like that revolving door where you just keep going and going and going and having all these different guys just get in there and do the job. Mm-hmm. And I think that also plays into it, but not nearly as much as the fact that, you know, if he would have had one game where it was all on him, I think it would have made a bit of a difference.
You know, mentioning that Dallas game, he has 27 rushing attempts in that game, 170, one touchdown. We all kind of know it. I mean, the Bills have openly talked about how, yeah, we kind of just killed the game away. Like, we realized they weren't going to change, and we were like, no, all right, cool. We'll just get rid of you then. His highest rushing attempts this year was last week, 23 rushing attempts. His highest before that is a 20-burger against Houston.
So, I mean, he was close. And obviously, honestly, like looking at the numbers here, it was kind of an average. I'm going to guess, without doing the math on the averages here, I'm going to guess about 15, 16 attempts per game. And to have the numbers he's having with those, like with the rushing attempts he's having, like I feel like that's really, really good. Like his yards per carry this year has... feel it's actually worse. Well, actually, no, technically it's not worse, because if I'm looking at his rookie year too. He only had 89 attempts his rookie year, and he was 5.7 yards per attempt. But this year, 4.9 yards per attempt on less carries, but more essentially more effective on less carries. That's what he was this year. Because last year he had 4.7 yards per attempt.
Yeah,
it's kind of splitting hairs at that point, but it felt more effective throughout the entire season. Like him... as an impact player this year compared to last year, yes, last year he was good, but this year it felt like he impacted the game more.
Well, I mean, you've heard guys like even Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports mention that, like, this is the best Bills team he's seen in this era, and a lot of it is to do with the offensive line, yes, and James Cook's kind of emergence. Last year he becomes a 1,000-yard rusher, makes a Pro Bowl. This year he is tied for first in the league in rushing touchdowns with Jahmyr Gibbs and Derrick Henry, 16 rushing touchdowns each. And yeah, like I can, and that's where like I can understand why is like there's another guy that is taking a load off of Allen. It's why like Khalil Shakir, I think, has become so important for the Bills too, of being second in the league in yak yards, only behind what, Jamar Chase, who is arguably the best receiver in football, one of like six or seven receivers to have the Triple Crown, receptions, receiving yards, and touchdowns, the leader across the season. they're not like this like named talent team, but I feel like that is going to change next year. Like, I feel like somebody like Spencer Brown, if he continues to have a year like he had this year, is going to be an all-pro Pro Bowl right tackle. Mm-hmm. Because you're starting to see nationally people mention like, yeah, you know, Allen only sacked 14 times and like their running game was awesome. Like, maybe there's their offensive line is better than a single Pro Bowler.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to say just, anything crazy, maybe. But maybe. I don't know. You know, that's...
It is.
I'm frustrated like, they didn't get a lot of name talent. I can understand it though. This team was noted to be coming in as a transition year. You know.
Yeah, that's the thing too. Like when I look at everything that happened with all the Pro Bowl voting and everything like that, it bothers me, but not really. Like, yes, they all had good seasons. Yes, everything worked out nicely for the Bills. But if you're looking at the big picture,
mm-hmm.
Like that Pro Bowl stuff, it's just based off numbers and everything like that. Like, it's mm-hmm. based off stats. And if you look at, you know, let's say Mac Hollins, he leads the Bills in receiving touchdowns. He does not lead the league in any sort of other statistic. No. And even a guy like Khalil Shakir, who at one point had only dropped 3 passes the entire season, he's also a guy that maybe should be getting a look for that, but it's because his volume isn't that high. It's because mm-hmm. of how this offense is set up that those types of skill position players won't get the recognition that they might deserve because they are so effective for their team, just not in high volume, high, you know.
They're not number ones.
Right. They don't jump off the screen at you, but you know that they're a very important piece to that team.
Mm-hmm.
The offensive line, though, I feel like, I mean, offensive lines in general, you can't really track much with that. You can track, obviously, like, you know.
How many sacks do they give
sack
up?
Pressure rates and all that. But in terms of like the eye test and everything like that and looking at like simple stats, there's not much there. So I do think that the Bills got pretty snubbed there in terms of giving their whole offensive line, kind of giving them their flowers and everything mm-hmm. like that. But, you know, when it comes to the entirety of the team as like the Pro Bowl thing, I don't think it really is that big of a deal.
I just like it for the guys because there's always contract incentives.
No,
like,
I get that.
Like, that's the only thing I care, because I don't really care for the Pro Bowl games. I care for the guys that are like, yeah, if I get like a Pro Bowl, I get like an extra $250,000.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, sick. You deserve it. Great.
No, I get that part of it. But what I do love about this team is that doesn't matter to them. That it doesn't matter who did what, who won what, mm-hmm. who won whatever.
It's been a big talking point.
Aside from the fact that they all want Josh to win MVP. Like, that's the only thing that everyone's like, we need this for him. But even that in itself is something that's so nice to see. And I'm not saying that's, you know, going to make you a winning team or anything, but it does help in terms of chemistry, in terms of the team kind of coming together. And it helps when you're trying to keep the team together in the offseason.
Mm-hmm.
When you have these guys that are pending free agents, like even Amari Cooper, who comes in here partway through the season, he's going to see the kind of withstanding effect of all these guys around him welcoming him with open arms and also just the togetherness that this team has. He's going to see that and say, hey, this is pretty nice. Like, I might want to stay here.
Yeah.
You know, even if I do have to take a pay cut, I might want to stay here. Like, and again, that's
down the road.
But my point overall is this team kind of, to pull like a meme out of the air here, it's kind of like the power of friendship. We're going to just beat you with all being a good team. And at the end of the day, you have to win the game on the field. But when the team works together the way that the Bills have this year, it's a lot easier to do it than when it's kind of, you know, I mean, we've seen it before me and you personally haven't, but mm-hmm. Bills fans have seen it before. The bickering Bills.
Yeah.
Like, it does cause problems. The further you get, the higher stress there is, the more pressure there is.
I mean, you look at the team like a Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Where, I mean, you got A.J. Brown reading a book on the sidelines because he's got one target.
That book, sales-wise on Amazon, I saw a tweet today, has gone up 5 million %.
Yeah, it's absurd.
Like,
I meant to look up the book's name, I think,
it's
yesterday.
Crazy.
Inner Excellence, Train Your Mind for Extraordinary Performances and the Best Possible Life. It is written by Jim Murphy. And yeah, it is just skyrocketed up Amazon's bestseller list.
Yeah.
Which I think is awesome.
So amazing to see. But like you were saying, though, with the Eagles, like
they were having issues a month and some change ago where the passing game wasn't going and A.J. Brown and Jalen Hurts are not having a great time. And I can't remember the defensive player, but like he went on like a podcast and was like, yeah, I mean, like, they're not best friends. Like, you know.
Yeah. And then he was like, I didn't realize I
wasn't supposed to say that. Did not know that was not public knowledge.
Right.
And yeah, like their first playoff game, you know, Kellen Moore, their OC, seems to be just like completely just off. With the passing, there's no reason, like with Devonta Smith and A.J. Brown, And it's Saquon Barkley in the backfield. Your passing attack is not one of the best in football. There's just no reason.
Yeah.
And they weren't. I mean, Green Bay was just handing them the ball. And they're like, we kind of want a close game at home. We kind of want a close one. I get Jordan Love might be the reincarnation of Brett Favre, like, completely. We're good. No one's talking about that. Love is Brett Favre. Like, for every, like, mythical throw he makes where you're like, I'm going to tell my kids about that, and it's going to be just, I'm going to cry.
Oh, and then you get one that's just the exact opposite.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, where you're just like, I literally don't know how he threw that ball. I actually don't know how he threw that. Speaking of the 0-3 playoffs, that game, 4th and 26, goes to overtime, and Brett Favre inexplicably on, like, first down of overtime, just goes, I'm going to throw a bomb. No one's open. I'm just going to throw it to the Eagles defenders.
Yeah.
It's you gotta just sit down, have an afternoon, and just go through it. Every game was a banger. Every game for no reason was really good. I don't know why that was specific one came up other than like it was a great playoff run the whole way.
Mm-hmm.
But I sat down 3 days ago, watched it, and I'm like, this has changed my life forever. I knew about most of these games. I forget they were all in the same year.
I honestly like doing that too, like with just any sport. Like going back and just watching games when we were like kids where we didn't really understand what sports were.
Oh, yeah. Didn't have the same feeling about them. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Just like seeing like what these games were like. It's like, man, like that's...
It's so much fun. Growing up, I loved the America's games and stuff like that. Going through the Missing Rings ones was really good. What kind of got me into football when I was younger was actually NFL's top 10 lists, because it was something I'm a history junkie, and that continued on with, you know, sports.
Yeah, right.
And so like going back and like, you know, the top 10 lefty quarterbacks and like Bobby Douglas, Chicago Bears, 1960s. I'm like, who is that? Who knows him? Telling me he couldn't hit the broadside of a barn, but we're going to act like he was a great quarterback. Okay, I guess. But it's something I've always enjoyed about it. It's like going back to like years where, you know, even before my parents were born, of like, let's see like what the NFL was like then, like finding out it was either the 60s or the 70s was actually like very pass happy. And which was very weird for its era. And then it went back to rushing, and it kind of like it readjusted itself. It was very weird. But it was like in the Daryl LaMonica days where it was like, actually, everyone kind of threw the ball a lot.
Well, and also think about the fact too, like when you're looking at all these old games and everything like that, like thinking about the fact that there's no social media, there's no phones, there's no or even in like the early 2000s, there's early on the internet, like where you have to like wait 15 minutes for your internet page to
flip
load.
Flip phone, baby.
Yeah, yeah, the flip
LeBron
phone
LeBron James, Steph Curry, NCAA tournament game where he's just like sitting there like recording it on a camcorder.
The picture of LeBron you're thinking about is he's at WWE event, and he's got his flip phone out taking a picture of like Stone Cold Steve Austin or something like that.
He's like got the biggest smile on his face.
That's the stuff where I'm like, this is great. Like, I love looking back on this.
Oh, man. 803-0550 is the number if you want to join in the show. We have been talking as well of what do you think is more likely, a Sean McDermott screw up in the playoffs or Lamar Jackson bad playoff game. That has been kind of the stigma for both of them. Muffin tweets in, I don't think either happens, but I do think a McDermott screw up is more likely. Lamar's team is too good for him to have a quote-unquote bad playoff game. And then another one kind of similar to that has been JC tweeting in, a screw up. At least if Lamar had a bad playoff game, they have an immovable force in their backfield to rely on.
That's exactly what I was just thinking about, because I was looking at, you know, the Ravens game against the Steelers last week, and even games in weeks before, and even the Bills-Ravens game from earlier in the season. Lamar Jackson, his numbers don't look good in the sense of he's only got 175 yards. Mm-hmm. What's happening? It's because of the fact that Derrick Henry is there.
They can kind of just lean on him.
If there is ever a quote-unquote bad Lamar Jackson game this season, you kind of don't notice it because Derrick Henry most likely has kind of saved the game. And even later on in this season, since their defense has gotten better, there's been times where their defense has kind of pulled things out for them. So
except when they play the Steelers early in the regular season. Yeah, they apparently are the like, Lamar, go save us. Henry, you sit on the bench. And it's like, what are you guys doing?
Yeah.
Lamar's not playing that well. What are you guys doing?
But like that's the thing is, like, you look at all these games, and it's tough to see if there was a bad Lamar game, like looking at it from like the surface level, because Derrick Henry can easily cover that up. Their defense can kind of cover that up.
Yeah.
That's, I think, going to be the difference maker this year, is if he does have a bad game, you have other things to rely on. You have Derrick Henry. You can just hand the ball off to him 26 times like you just did last week and just hope that he runs like crazy. But the Steelers' defense, as good as it had been all year, was abysmal last week. I mean, they weren't anywhere to be found. 186 yards from Derrick Henry for 2 touchdowns on 26 carries. That's basically the same stat line he had against the Bills earlier this season.
I mean, that Pittsburgh team by the end of the year, I mean, there was, I think, two other teams in the AFC that lost their last 5 games. Tennessee, who's picking first overall, and I think Cleveland, mm-hmm. and then Pittsburgh. I think those are the three teams in the AFC that had lost the last 5 games of their season. Pittsburgh just had no life. You know, yeah. Sure, they kind of got back into it in the second half with just prayer bombs by Russell Wilson to George Pickens or Mike Williams. Like, Baltimore at that point was just, let's get out of here. Let's stay healthy. Let's get out of here.
Yep.
There was no fight to them. I thought they way over pursued on like every read option play. Kind of to me, like I said it at that night, it kind of has given off the vibe that they don't think Lamar will ever run, which is insane to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, they just over pursued. I know Sneaky Joe's brought this up a lot, but for a lot of people, it is kind of like the antithesis to like every Pittsburgh Steelers team they know. But like Mike Tomlin's defenses in the playoffs these last few years have given up a lot of points. I do wonder if it's, you know, to the quarterback position, not able to sustain drives such. I mean, but if Mike Tomlin's your coach, 4th and 1 is an insurmountable task. They are going to punt it as fast as humanly possible. But I think if I'm a Ravens fan, there's not too much I can take from the Baltimore from the Steelers game other than like, yeah, we may have actually broken them. We may have actually broken our biggest rival.
Right.
Because you're going into Buffalo now in a team that also think it's a Super Bowl window. I don't think that's true of Pittsburgh at all. There might be some of those guys on that team that think, we can make a run, we get hot, you know, the whole thing.
Every team has guys like that. Like, it's...
Listen to George Pickens, who, like, may be a crazy person, but he goes out there in the post game and it's like, yeah, like, I saw some signs of the offense in the second half. And like, oh, does that give you, like, hope for next year? No.
Yeah, right.
Not like, even slightly, I don't.
He is one of those guys where I was really interested in him in terms of, like, if Pittsburgh's going to tear it down, go get George Pickens. But just, I don't know. I mean, the vibe he gives off is not...
Not great. Bad, you mean? Yeah.
Yeah, a little bit.
He's a player... And there's been a lot of players throughout NFL history for me that I'm like, I mean, I love watching you, but like I would be very frustrated by you on my favorite team. Pickens like might be on that Mount Rushmore. I'm like, man, I love watching you play, and you're a lot of fun. You're talented, and you make me laugh mm-hmm. when like there are certain points in a game where he just decides, nah, I'm not going to run a route. They're not going to throw it to me. Yeah. I'm not going to run a route. And I'm going to make sure everyone knows I am, in fact, not running a route. And then he makes an absurd plays. I enjoy the fact that like he is very candid when he gets up in front of the media to the point where he has kind of stepped in it a few times. I mean, hell, remember early in the year when Fields was getting benched, we didn't know for sure yet. He speaks with the media and he goes, yeah, I've been working a lot with Russ. Like he's going to be playing next week. And everyone's like,
right.
Like say that again. He said, yeah, he's going to be playing next week. It's like, oh, okay.
Sweet. Thanks for the info.
So I enjoy a lot of it. But I know if like he was on the Bills, I'd be so frustrated by it. And I think mm-hmm. especially, too, to that point, his personality does not fit this Bills team at all. And I think it would cause problems. I think it would cause a lot of problems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
because he is talented enough to where you're like, you should throw in the ball more.
He's got that number one wide receiver vibe.
Yeah,
and I'm not saying I don't want the Bills to have a number one wide receiver, but like there's guys you can get that are like that. That like
just kind of do their thing.
Yeah, like Amari Cooper. Perfect example.
Amari Cooper.
At times, he's been a number one wide receiver.
Jefferson seems to have zero issues that Jordan Addison's also on his football team.
Yeah, and he also doesn't care really who's throwing him the ball because mm-hmm. he's had Sam Darnold throwing him the ball all season. So,
yeah. I mean, it's that's going to be a thing, too, that we're going to have to talk about again, right? Wide receiver. I mean,
I thought you were talking about Sam Darnold.
No,
I was like,
I mean,
please, no.
Cooper's 30. Samuel. Oh, we're starting to get something from Samuel, but.
Yeah. Yeah, that one. Samuel's on the longer deal, but
yeah,
are you going to believe in that for a longer term? That's the thing that I wonder about.
Josh, I was so gung-ho on Matthew Golden like a month and a half ago, and I'm like, guys, he's underrated. He might be Texas' best receiver. And the last month or so, I've just watched him become more and more clearly a first-round pick, and I'm like, unbelievable. Like, I can't have one guy mm-hmm. fall to the Bills where I'm like, they nailed it. Complete steal. Complete and utter steal. Unbelievable. 803-0550, the number to call if you want to jump on the show. Let's get to one more call here before next time out. Rick on the line. Rick, how are we doing today?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Doing very well.
Just to follow up what you're talking about, I watched the Pittsburgh game, the Pittsburgh-Baltimore game, and then I rewatched it. And they had the ends. They had Highsmith and Watt crashing inside almost on every play to mm-hmm. get to Derrick Henry. And they did nothing about Jackson. I think what what McDermott could do is spy Taron Johnson Jackson and let everyone else play straight-up defense.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely an idea. Rick, thanks for the call. And I do want to get more on that spy topic with Sal coming up after a quick timeout, because it is going to be something, too, with how dangerous Lamar is and knowing it's the playoffs and seeing how much he was willing to run against Pittsburgh. It's the same thing for Allen against Denver, how much they're willing to run once it becomes one-and-done kind of football. The idea of a spy kind of becomes a necessity, not even just a need. So we'll get more on that after a quick timeout. Sal Capaccio will join the show with the Bills getting back to work today. Sean McDermott expected to speak with the media in under an hour at 12 o'clock. Zach Jones and Josh Mitt here in the Northtown Automotive X Point Show. You're listening to WGR.
Allen turns the corner and he will catch it back in the end zone. Touchdown! Catch made. It is Dawson Knox, and the Bills strike first on an excuse me touchdown from Josh Allen.
Ah, the perfect game. One of the more fun playoff games, I think, ever for a lot of Bills fans. Funny enough, though, Josh, I had no thoughts going into that game. It was the 21 season was kind of weird. It was not the 20 season by any means. You know, the overtime loss in Tampa and stuff like that. It did not have the, you know, the same feel. By the end of that game, it was like they can beat anybody. And then, of course, 13 seconds happens just a week later. And even in that game, the offense looked unbelievable. Potentially, we have another 13-type-second matchup coming up this Sunday. And for more on that, we go to the Western Hotline. Sal Capaccio joins the show. Sal, how are you dealing with so many days still left between this game? I feel like I'm already on edge.
Yeah, listen, it's a good question, because I was kind of tired of the kind of toxicity of it all yesterday already.
Right.
And I'm trying not to kind of focus on that or look at that. You know, I'm trying to do my job, just kind of cover football. And but, you know, when you live in a social media world, and when you have these two fan bases that have been going at it about the MVP all year, and then you have this week, it just kind of, you know, ratcheted up. And then you have the whole, you know, Jerry Coleman thing, the reporter in Baltimore. Mm-hmm. You have people on social media making up stories that Matt Milano went on the radio out there and said things about Lamar Jackson, stopping him. So then you had a Bills fan do the same thing here and make up something about Kyle Hamilton going in a magazine. It's just kind of been a – and some of that can be fun, right? I mean, I'm not saying, like, oh, my God, like, you know, trying not to be a party pooper. I get it. But it's just created a whole bunch of stuff that I think is not about the game. And I'm here for the game. And I'm all about, you know, trying to focus on what's going to happen Sunday. But I do believe that it's hard because of all those things. You know what I mean? And I hear where you're coming from with that.
Yeah, absolutely. And real quick on the Jerry Coleman thing, too. The teams actively avoid to have, like, any, like, you know, a built-in board material, anything like that. And, like, he himself posted after a question after Harbaugh, and the video is kind of like, this is uncomfortable, can we move on? Just foolish, I think, in a way. But, Sal, to this game, too, I feel like this is going to be an all-time crowd for this Bills game with all the storylines, with, as you brought up, how toxic it has kind of been, but with maybe sort of the storyline of, you know, is Allen taking the MVP, or is Lamar taking the MVP from Allen and all this stuff, and both teams sort of having these quote-unquote playoff failures to their name. I can't wait. I we've been talking about it for a few weeks here. I think legacies are going to be, to a certain extent, almost fixed with the winner of this game, and another team just it's going to be tough to recover from a loss like this, and both teams are worthy.
Yeah, they'll certainly be dug in. I mean, I don't know if you ever get fixed. You know, I grew up a little before you, while John Elway and Dan Marino and Jim Kelly never won Super Bowls, and that was what stuck with them. And Kelly lost four in a row, and Elway lost three. And then suddenly, late in his career, Elway wins two, right? So his legacy changes completely. But it took him until he was in his mid to late 30s before anything like that happened. But I agree with you that what we have now and how these teams and quarterbacks and coaches are perceived, I think that, you know, regardless of what happens on Sunday, and maybe not regardless, but going to kind of stick with someone here in that same regard. And the way I've looked at it is, if it's the Ravens who lose, I think it will be, now, unless Lamar just plays lights out and they lose, that could happen for sure, you know? But I feel like John Harbaugh, because he has a Super Bowl, has kind of been the one that hasn't really gone to him. but it has gone to Lamar because he's had poorer playoff performances, right? And that's kind of something he has to overcome. On the other side, I think it's the opposite. For the Bills, if they were to lose this game, Josh Allen, almost regardless of how he plays, I don't think that it gets attached to him as much as it does Sean McDermott because of how playoff performances have gone in the past, right? If all that makes sense. So I think that that's a really interesting scenario between the two fan bases and nationally and how these two organizations and those four men are perceived.
Yeah, I think it's spot on. A few weeks ago, maybe even a month and a half ago, before the playoffs really got going, teams were starting to clinch spots. I listened to the Colin Cowherd, John Middlecalf podcast a lot, and both men mentioned, you know, again, before the playoffs even were going, they assumed this was going to be the Sean McDermott, Lamar Jackson playoffs because those two kind of have, you know, whether it's right or wrong, kind of have that on their name of, like, you're the reason this team hasn't gotten to a Super Bowl yet. McDermott, of course, famously with 13 seconds, but there's been others. I mean, even last year with some of the personnel decisions, what have you, losing two straight home playoff games, not great for any head coach. And then for Jackson, you know, you've had the two seed once here. You've only made one AFC championship game, and he's had a lot of playoff failures to his name, bad games, not looking like the two-time MVP. I talk a lot about this on air too. Like, I love the playoffs more than almost anything. I love legacy talk. I love all of this stuff. And this is where it comes into it, is games like this where it's two guys at the peak of their powers, two really good teams, one I think more underrated than the other. But there is some potential injury notes to this as well. I mean, Zay Flowers maybe not going to play in this game. The Bills, for as healthy as they've been, there were some injury notes, you know, on Sunday as well. Yeah. It's going to be I can't wait for Sunday night.
Well, so let's get to it here. We'll hear from Sean McDermott in about 25 minutes from now down here at One Bills Drive. That's where I am. And Sean will be speaking to the media for his normal Wednesday, 12 p.m. press conference ahead of practice. The team will hold a walkthrough today, normal procedure here on a Wednesday. We'll hear from players afterward, including Josh Allen. McDermott will give us an update on Ray Davis. Will he participate today at all? I'm not sure. He is in the concussion protocol, obviously. You know, you have a week here to have him progress through the steps. If he's limited today, if Ray Davis is limited, I think that's a very encouraging sign. But of course, it doesn't guarantee anything. If he doesn't practice, obviously, you start to think that, you know, okay, well, that's obviously limited now, the number of days he has remaining to get back, but it also doesn't guarantee that he can't. On the other side, but we also have Alec Anderson to monitor. He has a calf injury. He's considered day-to-day. He did finish the game, it's notable, on Sunday after leaving the game with a calf injury and then, you know, going in at halftime a little early and then coming back out. And then the other one would be Brandon Codrington, obviously, who missed last week's game with a hamstring injury. Sean McDermott said on Monday he's improving. He did practice at the tail end of last week, so hopefully that means, and it's good news for him, practicing this week as well. On the other side, Zay Flowers is really the one we're watching for the Baltimore Ravens. I listened to John Harbaugh yesterday say, you know, there's what he doesn't have to practice all week in order to be able to play. They'll know more later in the week. So my guess is he won't practice today, but we'll see. I don't know, guys. Even if Zay Flowers plays, it feels like, you know, he would be pretty compromised based on kind of how they're talking about the injury and, you know, his situation.
Yeah, so that's one of the things we were talking about most of this morning is, like, what happens with that Baltimore offense if they don't have Zay Flowers? And obviously Derrick Henry is still the standout there, but, like, if you're the Bills, what's your kind of game plan here? Like, how do you plan for a guy like Derrick Henry, knowing that you also have to potentially plan for Mark Andrews, even Zay Flowers if he's there, and of course Lamar Jackson's rushing ability as well? I mean, the linebackers are going to have their work cut out for him.
Yeah, I agree, and I think that might be what you have to do. Speaking of linebackers, Josh, is maybe play more three linebackers, more base set, you know, 4-3. But, you know, people have hypothesized that. I'm just not sure the Bills want to do that because they have Taron Johnson, who's amazing at his job. But he is smaller. He's a nickel corner. And it's not like you can't stop the run with Taron Johnson. Of course you can. But when they bring in their 300-plus pound fullback and they go a couple tight ends and they have Derrick Henry, you know, you want to be able to have more beef on the field in response to that. So I do wonder if the Bills do that and they go with what would be Terrell Bernard, Matt Milano, and my assumption would be Dorian Williams, you know, at the strong side. We'll see. Maybe Joe Andreessen. He could play the strong side too, by the way. I mean, you know, who knows? I'm just saying that it would probably be Williams because he also has the speed. If you want to spy on Lamar Jackson, you know, he's done that before as well. Matt Milano has been used as a spy, you know, to try and contain him at least a little. I'm not saying that straight line speed, that these guys are faster than Lamar, but at least try to contain him a little bit. So It's a tough call. Now, if Zay Flowers isn't available, maybe that alters how you do play it and say we're going to do more of that because, you know, he's such a really good slot receiver. Taron Johnson, if he is playing, Taron Johnson, obviously you'd want him on him. So I do think that it matters here, and we'll see how it plays out on Sunday. But, you know, that's what game planning and coaching is all about, and it's going to be a fascinating chess match.
Sal, both these teams wanted a blowout for Wild Card Weekend. Ultimately, outside of one game, it was a pretty rough watch. If you're a neutral fan, every game is kind of lopsided. But how much, if you're the Bills, can you really take from the Baltimore game? It felt a lot for that Pittsburgh game that Pittsburgh just was ill prepared. I know a lot on the broadcast was talking about them just not having the typical quote unquote Pittsburgh Steeler fight or anything like that. It's just watching that game for me, it just kind of felt like, yeah, they're a better team in Pittsburgh is the Pittsburgh Steelers lately in the playoffs. I had a tough time kind of taking anything from that game.
Yeah, me too. But I think from what I saw, though, regardless of that, and you're not wrong about that, I think Pittsburgh just wasn't up to the fight. You know, personnel-wise, we saw Pittsburgh kind of really not play their best football, I guess you'd say, over the last 6-7 weeks anyway, and we saw that going that way, or at least several weeks. But I think what you did see was, you know, Baltimore came out and they were aggressive right away, and they went down the field and they scored. They scored again. I mean, it was, you know, 21-7 or whatever it was pretty early in the game, or, you know, early in the second half, whatever it was. It just felt like Baltimore just controlled the game from the get-go, and that's what the Bills can't have happen here, right? I think that this game is very important to me for the Bills. I don't think you have to necessarily, it'd be great to score early. Like, that'd be a really great thing for the Bills. Score early, get on top of them. But what you can't let happen is the Baltimore Ravens get on top of you, because then they start controlling the game with their run game, and you just can't let that happen. And if the Bills can put them, you know, behind and the Bills lead, then I think that Baltimore has to play a little bit differently and can't do that with Derrick Henry. And remember last year in the AFC Championship, I know they didn't have Derrick Henry, but the Ravens were criticized heavily for abandoning the run very early in that game. And, mm-hmm. you know, I think that's what the situation you want to put them in.
Yeah, absolutely. I think this is going to be a game where the first quarter might decide kind of how this game is going to look the rest of the way. All right, Sal, we'll let you get out of here, get ready for Sean McDermott, and we'll talk again soon.
All right.
That was.
All right, guys, thanks a lot.
See you, Sal. That was Sal Capaccio on the West Her Hotline, giving his thoughts here as Wednesday is kind of like the official start of game week, with the Bills having off Tuesday. And this is kind of the start of, all right, here we go. We're rocking and rolling. I can't wait. I'm excited. And, I'm going to be a wreck by Friday. I can feel it. Yeah, Saturday's going to be a nightmare for me.
It's got that vibe.
Saturday, I'm just going to spend like my whole time at like the driving range. Just like anything to distract me, anything to like just like, because like, Even this past week for Wild Card Round, like watching the games on Saturday, I was like on like the edge of my seat going like, all right, I'm ready for the Bills. I'm ready for Bills Denver. Let's go.
I think I might join you because I'm in the same boat. I have nothing to do. Yeah. There's no sport. Wait, did the Sabres play?
On Saturday?
Yeah. At least there'd be sports.
There would at least be sports. I mean, I always have college basketball as well. So
ooh, that's true.
I will always lean to them. But for Saturday, they do not. Friday, they do. Against Pittsburgh. Are they home against Pittsburgh? They are home against Pittsburgh.
Yeah, they're home against Carolina tonight as well.
Look at that. 6 o'clock start time.
Love the 6 o'clock start time.
Wednesday.
I went to a 6 o'clock start time game, and it was perfect. You get out of the game at like 8:30, 9 o'clock. You're home by like 9, 9:30, depending where you live, and it's like peak.
Yep.
Just do every game at 6 o'clock, please.
Also have some college football news. Not too surprising. He kind of mentioned it right before the Ohio State game. Texas quarterback Quinn Ewers is heading to the NFL draft. I think he's
Arch Manning, baby. Let's go.
Yeah, he's expected to probably be, I would say, late first, probably early second, just because of his ability and what he did in college.
Mm-hmm.
I will also say, as much as I've had an up and down relationship with him, this also probably tells you how the Texas quarterback position has been most of its life. I'd probably put him at third. I would have Vince Young, Colt McCoy, Quinn Ewers. Those are the top three Texas quarterbacks of all time. With, of course, throwing in there James Street, Bobby Lane, Chris Sims, like those guys can be thrown in there as well as like some of the all-time great Texas quarterbacks. But I think those are the top three. None of them won a Heisman. Colt didn't win a national championship, but was awesome. Young is maybe, you know, he kind of was Cam Newton before Cam Newton.
Mm-hmm.
And you wonder what his legacy could have been like if he was, you know, 10 years later in the NFL. But he was exceptional for his few years at Texas. And, of course, winning the 2005 national championship, the 06 Rose Bowl, if you will, because, of course, New Year's Day. But yeah, I mean, we'll see what Arch Manning can do. He's taken over a program that is not kind of dead in the water like it was for guys like Sam Ehlinger or Shane Buechele now, who's I still believe on the Bills roster as well. 803-0550, the number two call. We're going to take a quick time out here. We got one more segment before we get you over to Sabres Live. Again, the Sabres do play tonight against Carolina. 6 p.m. start time, which means our Steve Foley Law pregame show will get underway at 5 o'clock. Zach Jones and Josh Mitt here in the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. This is WGR. Welcome back, everyone. Zach Jones, Josh Mitt here in the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Brought to you by, of course, Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. Before we get out of here and get you over to Sabres Live, quick little Sabres talk as, of course, they are playing tonight at 6, 5 p.m. pregame right here on WGR. But the NHL is also releasing their quarter century teams today. Sabres are going to get released, we assume, probably around noon, one-ish. It'll be after we're off the air.
They tweeted out like an hour or so ago that it'll be announced this afternoon. Mm-hmm. So after we're done, obviously.
Yeah, it's going to be after we're done. But you've been playing around with it a lot in the
breaks. Had a lot of thoughts and a lot of instant thoughts of like who it's going to be. I tweeted it out if you want to check it out. At Schmitty47 on Twitter. I retweeted it with the GR account to get it out there and get it out there for you so you can read some of my numbers and stuff. But it's going to jump off the page that I don't have Danny Briere or Chris Drury on here. But I'm trying to base this off of how long players were here and how good they were. And yes, Drury and Briere were great. Mm-hmm. They were here for less than 300 games.
Yes.
That's the hard part. I wanted to put them on there. I really did. They played less than 300 games. Also, Eichel and Reinhardt, not on here. Because, one, I'm a little bitter. Two, Again, they weren't here for long enough periods of time, I don't think.
I think they're also just completely synonymous with other organizations.
Yes.
Because this is the NHL doing it, not the Sabres.
Yeah, this is the NHL, not the Sabres. But the problem is, though, Eichel is not going to be on a Vegas one because Vegas probably won't get one. At least I don't think so because they've only been around since 2017. Reinhardt probably won't be on Florida's because Reinhardt's only been there for 3-4 years. He might be, but he probably won't be.
Yep.
So I do think that Eichel might make it on here in terms of what the NHL puts out. But what I put out, and the NHL, the way they've been doing this is only like one line. So here's a lineup. Vanek, Tage Thompson, Jason Pominville. On defense, you got Rasmus Dahlin, Brian Campbell, and obviously in goalie you have Ryan Miller. So
I like what you're doing here with, though, like, let's go to games played. They've got to be good, sure, but they've had to have been synonymous with that organization.
Right, because a lot, like, again, you think of Drury, Briere, but they were only here for 3-4 years, and they didn't even start here. Mm-hmm. Vanek and Pominville started here.
We're part of the youth movement.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Vanek's rookie year was 05-06.
Thompson, not technically from here, but
true,
kind of has become what he is.
Right.
Here.
And he's one of the captains now. He's one of the leaders. Same with Dahlin. Dahlin is the captain. He has been here his whole career.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I mean, looking at all these numbers, too, like Vanek, 598 games played. Pominville, 733 games played. Jason Pominville was on the Sabres for nearly 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
Not the whole time, obviously. He did leave and come back.
But total time, yeah.
But total time, it was nearly 20 years. Rasmus Dahlin, obviously, has been here since 2018, played 471 games. Brian Campbell's the one that I had a little... The other defenseman was a little tough. Ristolainen was kind of a consideration for me just because of the longevity.
Mm-hmm.
I put Campbell on there because of how good he was and how much of a polarizing player he was for the team. He played 391 games. I thought about Henrik Tillander, and it might be a name some people don't think about, but he played almost 500 games for the Sabres. So, and he was another guy that, granted, he left and came back for one season, but still, he was a guy I thought about. And obviously, of course, Ryan Miller.
We'll see what happens with that one. It's released later this afternoon. But for more on the Sabres, do stay tuned. It's coming up next after a quick timeout. Sabres Live, Sabres taking on Carolina tonight, 6 p.m. puck drop, 5 p.m. pregame, both right here on WGR. Thanks for listening, everyone. Have a great rest of your day. This is WGR.